This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Avoid Probate with Jason Laidler, heard every Sunday at 8 a.m. on Zoomer Radio. Welcome to the program with a unique focus on helping Canadians avoid probate. The one thing everyone should know about probate is that it's not inevitable. With some planning and good advice, you can avoid the exhausting, expensive, and time-consuming probate process and have your affairs settled quickly and privately. Speaking of good advice, here are your hosts of Avoid Probate.
Good morning. Welcome to this episode of the Avoid Probate Show here on AM 740. I'm Jason Laidler with my world-famous co-host, Ted Walshin. Good morning, Ted. How's it going today?
Things are well. Jason, thank you for asking. How about yourself?
I'm doing just fine, thanks. I'm very happy about the long weekend, except that, you know, it's an indicator we're getting close to the end of summer.
I know. But you know that we have this discussion all the time at this time of the year. Summer doesn't end until the 21st of September. But people look at it as the end of summer because kids got to go back to school. And that has nothing to do with you nor me because neither of us are in school, although your daughter is and my granddaughter is. Well, preschool. So, yeah. But I know what you're saying. But tomorrow is Simcoe Day, of course, and that is a municipal holiday. It's not Simcoe Day everywhere. All the provinces seem to take on different names for it. And for example, in Manitoba, it's Terry Fox Day.
Yeah, that's interesting.
A fitting tribute to
for sure.
late hero.
Simcoe Day, well, I mean, it's the generic term is it's the civic holiday, right?
That's correct. So that's correct.
Different places give it different names.
I can't remember if Lord Simcoe had a clean history or not, because it seems that in the last few years or so, we keep digging up the past of all these politicians who we've named streets and universities after schools, and found out that they were, you know, they had slaves or they were racists or they were beaters of people or whatever. And Ryerson University is no longer Ryerson. And the debate continues in Toronto whether to change the name of Dundas Street. I think Lord Simcoe's clean, though. I'm not sure. I don't know. You can look into everybody's past, I suppose, and find something, but to certain degrees.
I think so, especially a long time ago.
So sad to see what happened last Monday, though, with our Canadian national women's soccer team.
I don't want to talk about it, man. Like,
yeah, I know, I mean, they didn't play well. There's no doubt about it. It just seems to me that there was something on their minds throughout the whole tournament, and I think that's the whole mess. The whole Canada soccer has just been. They're undergoing all kinds of change and all kinds of problems and stuff. They got to clean their house and get their stuff together because
what a shame.
The Olympics are next year and we're the defending champions.
They were in a tough group. They called it the group of death. They tied Nigeria. I'm happy to say they beat Ireland with respect to our Irish listeners. At least we got one win, and then they lost to Australia in the third match, and they were expected to, and all they had to do was draw. They had to draw against Australia. And they would have been through to the knockout stage, past the group stage. But it didn't happen. They got beat up by the Aussies.
4-0.
Yeah.
Not even close to a draw.
Nope.
And sometimes you'd rather lose by that much as opposed to losing by 1-0 in the last minute. And you think, you know, if we'd only held on for another minute, we could have got a draw and we would have advanced, you know?
Well, if Sinclair had scored that penalty shot in game one against Nigeria, that would have been a victory instead of a draw, and they would have had.
But the thing about that penalty shot is everybody assumes that because it's, you know, the advantage goes to the shooter, the goalie's got to guess, is he going to right or is she going left, you know, and the goalie guessed correctly and stopped the shot. It was a nice play on the goalie's part.
Well,
it wasn't a bad play in Christine Sinclair's part. I don't blame her. I don't think she's a scapegoat or anything. So stuff happens.
That's
just the way it is.
All right. Speaking of stuff happening, it is the Avoid Probate Show.
Today.
Yeah, we got a jam-packed show. We're going to try to get all the content in. to it. Of course, Debbie Stanley is coming up.
I spoke to her briefly before the show, and she had a big smile on her face, so I think she's got some good news to deliver for us.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
What else we got going on today?
Well, of course, we've got our email bag, and we've got some interesting questions in regards to
the estate
process of being an executor, and somebody comments on their experience of becoming an executor. And
oh, yeah. Sorry, you're talking about the email bag. Yep, that's yes. That's right. Great email. Interesting email. I'll talk about that later on, of course. And then, as I started to say, we are going to take a close look at this thing called an estate account. What is it? Do you need one or not? That kind of thing. Good information. We're gonna explore that. Right now, though, we're going to take our first break. We'll come back with an update, like Ted said, from Debbie Stanley solving the probate puzzle. We'll be right back after this.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this.
Hi there, this is Jason Laidler from the Avoid Probate Show, and I'm pleased to say I'm having a quick conversation to introduce my friend Paul Portman from Portman Law, who is a regular contributor to the Avoid Probate Show. He's one of the lawyers on the team at avoidprobate.ca. Paul, how are you?
Good, Jason. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. So you're one of the lawyers on the team because you have an expertise in law, specifically in what part?
So I specialize in estate law, litigation, and bear trusts. I do quite a bit of work in that area.
And I'm glad you mentioned bear trust, because we often talk on the Avoid Probate Show about how a bear trust can help avoid the probate on property, correct?
That's right.
And it's widely misunderstood, but it's something that you're able to help our listeners figure out and avoid the probate on their house, cottage, commercial property, whatever it might be, right?
That's correct, yeah.
And how does it work? Like, in a nutshell, the way the bear trust is set up, tell us real quick.
Yeah, so a bear trust in a lot of ways is like any other trust agreement. The major difference between a regular trust agreement and a bear trust is that the bear trustee doesn't really have any powers in relation to the trust. They can't really do anything other than what's explicitly in the bear trust agreement. And the bear trust agreement doesn't say anything other than they're holding legal title.
So really, it doesn't change anything. It doesn't create a tax event. It just simply avoids the probate nightmare.
That's correct.
Okay, and if listeners want to contact you directly, I mean, they can always reach you through us at avoidprobate.ca, but if they want to contact you directly, the best way to reach you is what?
They can contact me by email at paul@portmanlaw.ca. That's PORTMANLAW.ca. Or they can contact me by telephone at 647-527-5878.
And it doesn't have to be a bear trust question in particular, any estate question, you can help them out, correct?
That's right.
All right, well, thanks for being here today. And I know you've been a guest on the show in the past, and hopefully you'll be a guest in the future, and we will continue to work together to help all the listeners at AM 740 Zoomer Radio who have any estate planning questions. They can call Jason Laidler or they can call Paul Portman directly.
This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Welcome back. You are listening to the Avoid Probate Show with Ted Walsh and Jason Laidler. And the information we provide each week in this program is for general consumption. It's not intended to provide particular legal or investment advice. Every situation is, of course, different. So if you have legal or investment questions, you should speak with a licensed expert, and we have them on hand. You can contact them via email or us via email, and we'll contact them via email. info@avoidprobate.ca, or toll free. The number is 1-844-667-7628, 1-844-667-7628. Mr. Laidler, our good friend Debbie Stanley from ETP Canada joins us once again for her weekly updates. This is week 9 on a new Solving the Probate Puzzle segment with Roxy Moo. That is the fictitious name of the estate that we have landed upon. How are you, Deb?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you.
Hi, Deb.
Good. Everybody's excited for the long weekend.
Yes. Yeah. Are you?
Yes. I'm always excited for long weekends.
Exciting plans? Anything fun?
No, it will be a stay-at-home long weekend, which is nice.
You have a dog, right?
I do have a dog, yes.
Does your dog freak out with fireworks?
He does not like fireworks. That's correct. Yeah. He's okay with thunderstorms, but not the fireworks. He tries to hide under the coffee table, and he's over 100 pounds. So you can imagine what that looks like.
Yeah. How about your dog, Jace?
Hates it. German Shepherds hate the noises, hate the thunder, hate the fireworks, even a strong wind. You know, they look vicious. She's a big baby.
Yeah.
comes running over, jumps on the couch, needs a hug.
I don't think my cat really likes it, but he doesn't freak out or anything. He's just not really happy with it. He's wearing one of those collars right now. We had to take him into the vet last Friday because he was having problems with his flow, if you know what I mean. So he stayed there for like 3 nights. And we have a great vet, Dr. Reed. He's such a caring guy. When we brought him home on Monday, he must have called like 3 times Monday. And like yesterday, he called me about 5 times, different times. How's he wound? Is he eating? Is he going to the bathroom regularly? Does he seem lethargic? Does he have any energy? And he's just, he's great. But he's got one of these collars now, so he doesn't go, you know,
lick
himself.
They're called Elizabethan collars.
Yeah, except this one is cloth. I've never seen it. It must be a newer model. It's not the rigid plastic ones, but it's cloth. And the funny thing is, you know, with cats, with their whiskers, the reason that they have whiskers is it allows them to judge space. So that when they're going through a door or they're going into a box or whatever, their whiskers will tell us what the width is, right? So now that he's got this collar on, you see him trying to turn a corner and he's always up against the wall. He keeps running into the wall because of the collar. So
not so graceful.
Yeah, not so graceful. But we try not to laugh at him because, you know, he has feelings, you know.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
Speaking of grace, Debbie, what's our update?
With
Roxy Moo.
I'm pretty excited to give you this update, and it's hot off the press because it just happened. But we received the check for probate.
Yay.
From the financial institution. So to recap, we have a condo, we have an online bank account that we have not been able to access, and then we had some financial institutions with investments, brick and mortar institutions. Now, because we couldn't access the bank account, we had $74,000 in probate fees that were payable to submit our probate application, and no way of getting access to this money. So after jumping through several hoops with the financial institution, I received in the mail from them a $74,000 check, not written out to Debbie Stanley, I do want to be clear. It's written out to the Minister of Finance, and we were able to submit the probate application.
Right.
Wow. That's crazy. Now, I mean, go ahead, Ted.
Do you not know how much money is in that virtual bank?
We have an approximation, but of course, because we couldn't get the actual date of death, we went from some statements we found that were pretty close to around when she had passed. Mm-hmm. So again, we have the approximation. We will be amending that once we have access to everything. Mm-hmm. So I think Jason has said this several times before. It's a guesstimation of the assets when you're doing probate. You try and get as close to accurate as possible, but it's very likely that once you receive your certificate of appointment or probate certificate, that you will have some adjustments. Sometimes there's just assets you didn't know about that needed to be added on, or you had the wrong bank balance. So there usually is an adjustment, and you have to request either a refund from the Minister of Finance because it was too much tax paid, or you have to pay the additional tax owing.
A refund. Give me a break.
I will admit, I have done several refunds, and they do come in. There was a period in time, and I hope somebody's listening from the Minister of Finance right now, where they were issuing the refunds twice. It was very confusing. So they would send the executor the refund, and they would send us a refund. It was very, very confusing.
For the same amount?
Yes.
For the same amount.
Yeah, and I don't know what was happening, so we had to keep sending back checks. So if somebody from the minister is listening, please rectify the 2-check refund issue.
Please stop sending too much money.
Yes, yes, please. It's very confusing for the estate.
So this checks and balances process that Debbie's talking about, this is one of the drastic changes that took effect in 2015 when the province revamped the probate rules. Prior to 2015, Debbie's estimate that she's submitted, the $74,000 check submitted with the application to get the ball rolling, that was it. There was no follow-up. So the processors, the executors, the lawyers, anybody submitting this application paperwork would take a guess, like Debbie's done. Let's assume it was a legit best guess, air quotes, and the province was satisfied with that. And there was no follow-up required like there is today. So Debbie's going to have to, fine-tune the number as she just described, and she'll be on the clock. The clock will be ticking. She's got a deadline to do that. Anybody doing this work, once the province processes this application and says, okay, we get it. We've noted your 74K initial payment. You've got 180 days to tighten it up and give us the actual number.
That's correct. So the clock starts ticking as soon as I get my certificate.
Yep.
So when I work with executors, what I tell them is that it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride for various reasons. But if we think of the waiting processes, you're kind of going up the roller coaster, waiting for all this stuff. And then you're going down the roller coaster, doing a whole bunch of things. And then you go back up the roller coaster, waiting for more information. And then again. So that's really emotionally a roller coaster, but it's also a process roller coaster.
I love the sound effects. That was actually Debbie Stanley. That wasn't from the producer adding that. Those were live sound effects. Yeah. The other comment I was going to make is, we're saying it's week 9. It's actually a little bit longer because we didn't start this analysis on day 1. Debbie had a couple of weeks head start. So in reality, it's like week 11, week 12, something like that, since the process began. So what is that? 3 months before the application's even submitted.
Yeah. Yeah, right. It's been a couple months. I don't think we've reached quite 3 months, but or maybe we have. I feel like the summer is blowing right past us. But you're right. This is with a professional working as the executor, right. And we're still a couple of months before we could even submit to probate. And sometimes it's faster, sometimes it's longer, depending on the assets and access to things. But this one, I think I mentioned last week, I was a bit frustrated. I think I was venting a little bit that I felt like this was taking longer than I would have liked because I was shackled by the financial institution.
Yeah, well, don't blame me for that, but it is a long weekend, so you can relax a little bit this time.
Yes, especially now that we've entered this waiting process. Not that I can put my feet up and just sit back. As the executor, we still have work to do. So that's really important to note for anyone listening, is that even though you've submitted the probate application and your hands are tied until you get the probate application, you're still responsible for maintaining the asset. So in this case, we have a condo. I still have to go visit the condo, make sure the mail is picked up, make sure that everything is okay. We're still trying to sell the items inside of the condo because we can. It's not stuck at this point. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get some of those items moving as well. So when you're an executor, it means that you're still working regardless of the wait times. You're never really off the clock and the job's really not finished until you reach the end.
Yeah, because like you said, you're in a holding pattern now, waiting for this paperwork to get processed. You've got stuff to do in the meantime. And with regard to the condo, one of the things attached to that, of course, is continuing to pay the condo fees.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They don't stop just because you've passed away.
No. And remember, we don't have access to that bank account, so I haven't been able to write any checks. So guess who's covering those condo fees?
Wow, look at that. So a good example of an executor having to put their hand in their pocket.
Yes. So it just gives you more incentive to keep things moving along because, of course, I don't want to be paying condo fees for the next year.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's great. But before we let you go, I'm just going to mention after the break, we're going to talk about the estate account, spend some time describing what that is. And we're going to talk about the top 5 reasons why you need an estate account. I'm going to put Debbie on the spot right now because we didn't talk about this before we aired today. Give me one reason, Debbie. I'll tell you if it's on the list of top 5 reasons why you need an estate account.
My top reason for needing an estate account would be to keep all the finances clean. You never want to intermingle your money with estate money. So for me, our number one rule is keep money separate for an estate in its own account.
Okay, the listeners are going to have to stay tuned to find out if that's on the list or not. Good answer, though. Speaking of listeners, Debbie, if anybody wants to reach you directly for more information about your services, what do they do?
They can reach us at 866-309-0387. Our email is info@etpcanada.ca. Our website is etpcanada.ca. And then, of course, we have Canada's favorite executor course, which is called Executor Ready. And if listeners want to enter the code VIP-CLUB, they'll get the special rate of $99.
There you go. All right. We'll take a break and we'll continue with the information as promised right here on the Avoid Probate Show.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this. This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Hope you're having a good Sunday morning. Thank you for joining us on the Avoid Probate Show, whatever it is. Hey, it's a long weekend. I'm already there, apparently. I'm Ted Wallace, and he is Jason Laidler, and we invite you to send us your comments and your questions at info@avoidprobate.ca. That's info@avoidprobate.ca. Or if you wish, you can call us. It's a toll-free number, 1-844-667-7628, 1-844-667-7628. Jason?
Thanks, Ted. Okay, we're going to jump in here. There's tons of material to cover on the Avoid Probate Show this Sunday morning. We talked about this. We're going to talk about joint accounts, which comes up quite often, joint accounts and the problem with joint accounts. And we're going to talk about this thing called the estate account. That is a special kind of account. Touched on it with Debbie Stanley earlier. It's the account that gets created post-death, right? And so it's all very much part of the probate process, and that's why we're talking about it on the Avoid Probate Show. So, you know, hypothetical situation, and by the way, reference to an article called The Hidden Dangers of Cutting Corners, written by a lawyer named Lucy Kinnear. So credit to Lucy Kinnear for her work on this article that I'm going to reference here. My mother added me to her bank account as a joint account holder before she passed away. Can I just keep using that account for the estate instead of opening up a new estate account? It is a unique type of account. The estate account is different. Like I said, it's a post-death account. So with the best of intentions, of course, aging parents often add one or more of their children to their bank account as joint account holders. We've talked about this many times. The parent may intend that upon his or her death, the child will use the money in the joint account to pay estate bills, funeral expenses, income taxes, and then ultimately divide the remaining balance among the parent's beneficiaries indicated in the will. Since this account is joint, though, the bank won't freeze the funds. The bank will simply remove mom or dad's name from the account upon receiving proof of death, leaving the surviving account holder with full access and legal ownership of the money in that account that they were joint on with mom or dad. An estate account, as I said, is a different kind of account. It's the new account opened after someone has passed away into which the executor deposits the deceased person's money, from which the executor pays the deceased person's debts and bills, and from which the executor ultimately distributes funds to the beneficiaries of the estate once all the other stuff's paid for. So during the time the money is in the estate account, the executor holds it in trust for the beneficiaries of the estate. That's part of the rules and roles of the executor. So frequently, though, a surviving joint account holder, i.e. the kid, the adult kid, we're obviously talking about adults here, they'll simply choose to continue using a joint account rather than going through the trouble of opening up a new estate account. All right, so let's assume the bank allows you to deposit incoming checks that are payable to the estate. For example, income tax refunds, insurance proceeds, CPP death benefit, whatever money mom was getting. I'm using mom or dad, whoever it was. Let's assume that the bank lets you continue to deposit those checks into the joint account. And this is a big assumption. This often does not happen. Many banks will not allow it. And that's because once the parent has died, the parent ceases to have any ownership interest in the joint account. And you can't deposit, normally, you can't deposit someone else's check into your account. I can't take, you know, a check payable to Ted Walshin and deposit it into an account owned by Jason Lehler. And, you know, Ted, remember you used to be able to endorse it on the back of the check, and then I could cash it, even though it was payable to you. There was a time when you just had to sign the back. The banks don't do that anymore. That third-party endorsement, they won't allow that to happen. So you can no longer deposit a check payable to someone else in your account. Simple as that.
We're pretending
though that this, in this case, they're letting it happen, because obviously it happens in some rare cases. But let's say the bank does allow you to deposit incoming funds, meaning nobody's requiring you to open an estate account. Well, simply continuing to use the joint account is attractive for its convenience and apparent simplicity, and is frequently carried out without problem or concern. It is a plan, her words, Lucy Kinnear's words, it is a plan fraught with peril. If not done carefully, it can create more problems than it solves. And here we're going to look at 5 reasons you should open an estate account, even if you don't need to. We tested Debbie Stanley without warning. We put her on the spot, asked her for what her reason was. We'll get to that in a second. Reason number one, which is not with Debbie, and I'm just going to go in order here in this article. Here's a problem, Ted, potentially. You know, you're my dad. I'm your kid. You put me on the account. You've passed away. I'm using the account still instead of creating the estate account. And so I'm using, you know, our account to take care of business. And something happens to me before it's done, before I can sort out everything. The surviving joint account holder, me, the kid, dies after the parent, but before all the bills are paid and all the funds are distributed. You know, the bank may treat the funds in that account as belonging to my estate, not as funds belonging to your estate. And if everyone's not on the same page, confusion and conflict can arise between the beneficiaries of the parent's estate and the beneficiaries of the child's estate. Mayhem, total confusion. If that person, the kid, I'll call him the kid because it's easier to distinguish. If that kid dies before taking care of business, wow, what a mess. So that's reason number one for having an estate account. Reason number two, what if the funds become commingled? Bingo. That's what Debbie said. Good answer, Debbie Stanley. Kudos to her. What does commingled means? Executors have an obligation to provide an accounting to the residual beneficiaries, you know, beginning on the date of death and ending on the date the funds are distributed. The executor has to keep a paper trail. And Debbie's doing that as a role as a professional executor. She talks about it every week. If you fail to keep careful track of every penny in and out of the account, you open yourself up to claims of mismanagement of estate funds by the beneficiaries. Keeping track of funds in an estate account is a simple matter. However, if the funds in the joint account are ever mixed up, or commingled is a technical term, commingled with your own funds, then preparing an accounting might be a confusing task. So worse yet, you may run the risk of having to share your money, like the kid's money that was already there. Now I have to share it with the beneficiaries, even if that money was not really part of the estate. So it gets complicated for tracking the accounting. And the accounting is a critical role of the executor and part of his job, his or her job. Reason number three, why you need an estate account. We're doing the top 5 reasons why you should open an estate account, even if you don't think you need one. Reason number three, what if the surviving account holder is not the same person as the executor? Think about that. So I'm the kid on the account. Mom or dad's passed away. I'm managing this joint account like I was before mom or dad passed away, but I'm not the executor. And it's the executor's job to take care of this stuff. Right. And they don't have access to this money because they're not on the account. I am. So that's a potential problem. Let's say child A is the executor named in the will, but the parent added child B to the joint account. After the parent's death, child A has all the executor's obligations to pay bills and distribute funds, but child B controls the purse strings. So it's easy to see that, you know, if child B holds the money in trust for the estate, but what if child B spends it all or gives it away to his or own family members? The bank can't stop child B from doing this, right, or from this behavior, because after all, in the bank's eyes, the money legally belongs to child B. That's the kid that was on the account before. Child A then faces the difficult task of pursuing child B on behalf of the estate. for the funds that Child B has misspent. Okay, complicated stuff. I know it's hard to follow along. Follow the bouncing ball here. Call us if you have questions. We will clarify any questions you've got. Email us, call us, like Ted says. Better still, call us or email us to book a no-charge consultation. We come to you. It's about an hour. There's no charge for the consultation, and we can explain this stuff in detail, answer all your questions. I always tell people by the end of the 45 minutes or so, you're going to be a probate expert, and we'll have answered a lot of your questions, hopefully all of your questions. Getting back to the list of top five reasons why you do need an estate account. By the way, we are providing that service. We are opening up estate accounts at avoidprobate.ca. We're doing this for people, and we're doing it avoiding probate. I'm not going to get into those details right now. It's complicated, but often probate is part of the estate account. We can do it without dealing with the probate, and that's why we do it. It is the Avoid Probate Show, and the name of the company is avoidprobate.ca. Getting back to the list, reason number four why you need an estate account. What if the surviving account holder, the kid, claims the money should belong to him or her alone? We've talked about this before, the resulting trust, P-Corp versus P-Corp. Hey, mom didn't want me to share that money. She wanted me to have it all together because she liked me better than you. I mean, that's cheeky, and that's, you know, I'm just making the point here. But maybe the parent really intended for the money to be shared by the beneficiaries of his or her estate, but maybe the parent intended for the surviving account holder to keep all the money as a gift, i.e. the kid. You know, perhaps the surviving account holder was the only child who helped the parent through a lengthy illness, and the parent wished to thank this child by putting his or her name on the account. That happens, of course. You know, if there's any question about the parent's intention, conflict can and frequently does arise, resulting in potential protracted court proceedings, significant legal bills, and, of course, family discord. We've talked about this over and over and over again. One of the perils of a joint account, you know, I call it ownership confusion. You know, when we do the transfer from the bank to the insurance company, we keep all of mom's money solely in mom's name. Now we can put a beneficiary on it. That avoids the probate. We don't need to add a joint owner. And that solves three main problems, as far as I'm concerned. Just three big ones. There are more, but the three big ones that I often talk about, especially when we do the Avoid Probate Roadshow, and we do invite you to call in or ask us if you are part of a group organization, we would be happy to bring the roadshow to you. And we're doing this quite regularly. It's growing in popularity. But what I say at the roadshow, we avoid ownership challenges. That's what I was just talking about there between the kids and the siblings. The mom wanted you to share it. No, mom wanted me to have it. That's an ownership challenge. You avoid taxation complications. I'm going to get to that, actually. You know, it could be complicated who's paying the tax on the joint account. And you avoid, most importantly, maybe exposure. I call it exposure to that other child's creditors, lawsuits, unhappy spouses. You know, that's an exposure issue. And we avoid all that when we do the transfer of funds from the bank. I say the bank, it's not always the bank. I just use the bank as an example. When we do the transfer from the bank to the insurance company, recreate a portfolio that everyone's comfortable with, which is not locked in. The money's not locked in at the insurance company. The portfolio is not locked in at the insurance company. And the beneficiaries are not locked in at the insurance company. They don't change very often. But I did get a call recently, Ted, from an elderly lady, existing client, and she asked me to change the beneficiaries. She's not changing the names. She's changing the rates. Like instead of 25, 25, 25, I can't remember what it was now, but they're not all going to be even. They're not all the same. Whatever it was, we are making a change. Like I said, not to the name, but to the actual payout percentage. And we can do that. Like I said, it's all accessible. We never lock in anything for our clients. The last reason on this list in this article titled The Hidden Dangers of Cutting Corners by Lucy Kinnear, the last reason on the list of five that she cites here is getting back to the taxation complication potential problem that I just described. Who claims the income on the account after the parent's death? Mm-hmm. So if you and I You're my dad. I'm on the account with you. I'm your kid. You pass away. Well, let's assume, you know, there's money in the account, and let's assume there's continued interest paying on the money in the account. Growth. Maybe it's invested in something that's growing, equities, hopefully, whatever. If the joint account generates a significant amount of interest, enough for the bank to produce a T5 slip, you will need to deal with the question of who must claim the interest on their income tax return. Someone needs to claim it. The tax man wants their pound of flesh, of course. And it might be hard to convince CRA that the income should belong to the deceased parent when the parent's name is not even on the account or on the T5 slip. So you see what I mean? It could create challenges with who's paying the tax. So in conclusion, again, for this article on reasons why you need an estate account, even if you don't think you do, I get it. It's more work. But opening a new estate account is not time-consuming or expensive. Often the only actual cost of opening an estate account is the fee to print the checkbook. And sometimes you don't even need a checkbook. And this last one that we did for a lady who called in looking for help, we're not getting a checkbook in this case. We don't need one. Every situation is different, like I said. Although you might be tempted to carry on using the joint account instead of opening a new estate account for the sake of convenience, You should consider the potential risks you run in doing so. I listed them a minute ago. And you might find that whatever convenience you gain just is not worth it.
Well, that's interesting. You mentioned that it's not time consuming and it's not expensive. Yeah. Yet it can save you time and save you expenses.
For sure. Save a ton.
Because without it, it can be expensive and it can be time consuming.
Especially if it goes to court.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And don't think it doesn't happen. We hear those horror stories all the time.
Yeah.
And it's about cutting corners. You know, it's a life lesson, not just when it comes to estate planning, right? What is it? Measure twice, cut once.
That's right.
Something like that.
Measure twice and cut once.
And
the carpenter's rule.
The carpenter's rule. And haste makes waste.
There you go. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go to the email bag. And we have a letter in response to another letter. The response is both from the originator and from themselves. Does that make any sense? It's a person responding to their own letter is what it is. Stay tuned, you'll figure it out.
Mud.
Learn more about avoiding probate at avoidprobate.ca or call 1-844-667-7628. Back with more Avoid Probate after this.
Hey, it's Ted Wallerstein for Tom's Place. Our fall merchandise is starting to arrive, and we've got massive amounts of summer clothing that needs to be cleared. Blowout prices on virtually everything, like designer suits, regularly up to $5.99, now from $167 to $267. Beautiful sports jackets, starting at only $167, and designer dress pants and shirts, all at $67. Check out our deals throughout the store on the very best of designer menswear. Huge savings off our already below retail prices. If you need a suit for an upcoming wedding or any special occasion, we are Toronto's one-stop suit shop. For the finest outfit for every occasion, there is no better time to find the perfect addition to your wardrobe. Everything is on sale to make way for our fall merchandise. Tom's Place is open 11 to 6 weekdays, 10 to 5 on Saturday, 12 to 5 Sunday. We're closed Monday during the long weekend. Visit Tom's Place, 190 Baldwin and Kensington Market. Tom's Place will suit you.
This is Avoid Probate on Zoomer Radio with Jason Laidler of avoidprobate.ca.
Hey, good morning once again. Welcome back. This is the Avoid Probate Show with Jason Laidler, and I'm Ted Wallerstein. And we welcome your calls and your emails with your comments and your questions. It doesn't have to be a question. It can be a comment as well. We accept those, but we welcome them. And we'll get back to you as soon as possible with an answer or a comment. And you can contact us. The email address is info@avoidprobate.ca. Avoid probate is one word in this case, info@avoidprobate.ca. Or you can call the toll-free number and Jason's mom will answer.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. 1-844-667-7628. 1-844-667-7628. So lots of great information on our website as well. We invite you to visit us there. www.avoidprobate, again, one word, www.avoidprobate.ca. And you will also find, amongst all kinds of great stuff, a free probate calculator. You can play around with that. It'll give you an idea of how much probate might be payable on your estate. So go to www.avoidprobate.ca and find out. Jason.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Ted. Okay, we're going to... We're going to look at an email we got. It was a follow-up email. I just want to set it up for a second for our listeners. Hopefully, some of the listeners will remember from last week when we addressed this listener's question and answer and we commented on the email. They were kind enough to take the time to submit to us. And we do that randomly, like Ted said. And, of course, we keep everything confidential and we pick emails depending on the topic and the relevance to the rest of the material this week in particular, or we try to tie it in as much as possible most of the time. And sometimes it's random, I guess. Anyway, this listener was talking about a recent experience with probate and the bank that they'd gone through. And they had a question about it. And we talked about, well, the question in particular, this might remind you if you were listening last week, and hopefully you were, they were asking, why didn't we name the bank? Remember, Ted, the question, and we gave several answers to that question, why we don't name the bank. And then in that discussion, I think I invited the listener. Well, I know I did. I invited that listener to keep us posted. And I was curious to know what they thought of the process after being through the probate process and whatnot. And sure enough, they were kind enough again to take the time to respond. So that's what's happening here. This is the response from a response from a response kind of thing, answering that question. So go ahead.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to break up the entire letter so that you will have a chance to answer before we go on to the next topic, so it doesn't get too confusing. You asked if I found the process difficult and if I would be willing to act as an executor in the future. The answer is that I found the process complex in that the estate also involved beneficiaries in Canada as well as Germany. So I arranged for a lawyer in Canada, who then arranged for a lawyer in Germany to represent the German beneficiaries, and a facilitator to translate all of our communication. The process went reasonably well. I did have to contact the Canadian government and was able to speed up the issue of having probate issued, since it seemed to be taking an inordinate amount of time, more than 3 months. I probably would take on the job again for family or close friends if requested to do so.
Okay, so I'll jump in here. There's a couple points I want to make with regard to that opening paragraph. For sure, it's worth repeating. The listener said the process was complex, and I think that's worth repeating. Like I said, it's not straightforward all the time, especially, interestingly, when there are beneficiaries outside your local area, mm-hmm. not just outside of your city, outside of the province, in this case, outside of the country, on a different continent. So, wow, like that's legwork and time. And you really got to be focusing on the task at hand here to do it properly when it's that complex. Of course, it's not always that complex. I understand that. We say all the time, every situation is different. But I love that. And that's why I wanted to share it. He mentions contacting the Canadian government. That's interesting. I'm not sure in what capacity or for what reason. It's not clear. But I want to make the point, and I have to do this quite often in our no-charge consultations. Again, call us for a meeting. There's no charge for that consultation face-to-face. I'm often reminding our listeners, Ted, that not to get confused with the provincial probate process and the federal CRA tax issues. They are unrelated to each other. Whatever the tax situation is on your house or your estate or your investment property, whatever it happens to be, that the tax is the tax. And even if you're helpful, if we're helpful for you to avoid probate to some extent or entirely, it doesn't change what the tax man is looking for. So they're unrelated. So that's why I thought that was interesting about the Canadian government. But it could have been for something else. It was not probate related specifically, because they got nothing to do with probate. Like I said, probate is a provincial matter. And lastly, it's worth repeating here, more than 3 months. Well, come on. We were talking to Debbie Stanley earlier, and it was almost 3 months before the application was even submitted in that case. So anybody who tells me they're done probate in 3 months, I'm going to be like, well, come on. Like, but it does depend on where you live. And I don't know where this jurisdiction was, but certainly if you're in the GTA, yeah, it's going to take more than 3 months. We know that. Look at Mr. Chips. Our regular listeners will recall it was like 42 weeks, 43 weeks or something from Mr. Chips. Least, yeah. Something like that. And here we are with, what is it, Roxy Moo, the newest file here that Debbie's working on. And mm-hmm. we're week nine or so just submitting the application. So, and now we're waiting for that. So it's obviously going to be way more than 3 months. And we tell people, I pick a number out of thin air when someone says, well, how long is it going to take? I say 10 months. And that's obviously a random guess, but it's in the ballpark. It could be a little bit less. It could be a lot longer. So those are my comments on the opening part. What else we got from this?
Okay, report? The next sentence. After this experience, I did take action to simplify probate in the future for my wife.
So simple comment here. Very common. Once you've been through it, you get it. And I say to people all the time, talk to someone who's been through the process. They will move mountains to avoid it happening again. And that's mm-hmm. exactly what's happening. We are hopefully convincing our listeners, Ted, to some extent anyway, let's be proactive. Don't wait to go through it. Call us beforehand so you can avoid it altogether. But it was worth pointing out, you know, it happens a lot. You go through it once, you're like, no, let's do what we got to do.
Okay, this person goes on, and I don't know if it's a male or a female, saying after this experience, my estate is sizable and will not require probate. Our house, all bank accounts are owned jointly.
Yeah, and we say this often too. You know, probate's usually not a big problem on the first death of a married couple. Normal, right. Old-fashioned married couple. Probate is not usually a problem because most of the assets are held jointly between spouses. But, you know, I also remind the couple, well, someone's going to die first most of the time. It's rare. You get hit by the same train, but I guess it happens, obviously. But most of the time, someone passes away first, and then there is a probate problem because it's not joint anymore. So, you know, kudos. I get it. Right now, husband and wife are both alive, so there's not much to worry about, but that's going to change. And when it changes, it changes. In other words, you know, you need help to make sure it stays. It's still going to avoid probate after the second death. That's a bit different. It's a lot different. That requires some work. What else we got?
My TFSA has my wife named as the successor holder.
Yeah, I love it. I wanted to share that because it doesn't say beneficiary.
Yeah.
It clearly says successor holder. And weeks ago, we talked about what that means. We said successor annuitant, successor holder, interchangeable terms that most people are unfamiliar with for sure. And what that means, I just want to remind the listeners, when you're the beneficiary of the TFSA, and you can be because it's a form of a registered account, so you can name a beneficiary on it. Doesn't mean there is one. You have to check because the bank usually often ignores that part, which is not cool. So the beneficiary gets the money. The successor holder or successor annuitant gets the plan. It just changes the name on the plan. It doesn't pay out. The plan still exists. So that's the difference. I wanted to remind the listeners. And you can only do that with spouses, and you can only do it in certain situations. But it is an option, and there can be good reasons to set it up that way instead of naming a beneficiary.
But the person who receives it, the successor, does have the option of cashing it in, right?
Of course, because they own it.
Right.
So their name goes on the account, and they can do whatever they want with it. But they have options. The beneficiary doesn't have options. The beneficiary gets the money. That's it. There's no option.
He goes on to say, or she goes on to say, as well as my annuities and life insurance policies, all pass outside the estate.
Right. And that's part of our solution here. That's why I wanted to share that, because the solution we're talking about every week on the Avoid Probate Show is let us help you do the transfer of the non-registered money from the bank to the insurance company, where the rules are different. Annuities are an insurance product. Life insurance policies are obviously an insurance product. I'm not talking about life insurance policies when I'm talking about the transfer. I'm talking about apples to apples. Investments are here at the bank, and we transfer them for you over to an insurance company and add beneficiaries to those investments once they're transferred at no cost to you, by the way. And again, once the beneficiary is on that account, it avoids probate, just like in this case, this person's annuities and life insurance policies, because they have beneficiaries on them. And that's what we're doing for your investments. The bank can't do it. We can.
Mm-hmm.
I think, oh, it's not quite done. I thought it was done.
And finally, the comment is, you're offering a great service, which so many folks need to understand before they can take the steps to minimize the impact of the probate process.
Yep. Fan mail, man. We get so many comments, emails, people telling us, thank you for the service you're providing. I wish I heard the show years ago. You know, keep up the good work, that kind of thing. So we really appreciate that feedback. We can't tell you how important it is for us to hear that feedback and know that people are benefiting from taking the time on Sunday morning, Ted, you know, a little bleary-eyed maybe with a coffee or tea and listening to us. We hear stories. People are doing it on the road. People are doing it in the barn because they got to get out and feed the animals or whatever.
Something that you've missed, if for some reason you're in the middle of doing something on a Sunday morning and you're listening to the show and somebody comes to the door and you miss 5 or 10 minutes of the show, you can always go online to avoidprobate.ca and listen to the past shows. Like this program that you're listening to right now, if you missed the beginning, let's say you just tuned in and you want to hear what you missed, well, then you can. Tomorrow or the next day, it'll be available online in the podcast form for you.
And absolutely. Good point.
Now, speaking of, closer and closer.
Speaking of podcasts, Ted, you've got a podcast.
I do.
What are you talking about lately?
I've already done the interview. And the show is actually available now because each new program episode drops on Thursdays. And it's a guy by the name of John Scheinfeld. And he is a writer and director of documentaries, predominantly. We interviewed him back in April. He did a documentary called What the Hell Happened to Blood, Sweat, and Tears. It's a fascinating story about that band. And he has just completed and released a documentary on Elvis Presley. But not just a documentary on the life and times of Elvis Presley, specifically this focuses in on a television special that was recorded in 1968. In 1968, Elvis Presley's career was going downhill. He was becoming a has-been because the British invasion had hit, fueled by the Beatles, of course, and music was changing, and he wasn't changing with the music, and his manager, Colonel Tom Parker, arranged for them to do a television special. He wanted to do, Colonel Tom wanted to do a Christmas special. Well, they hired this director named Steve Binder, an up-and-coming young director, who had different ideas completely. He said, I think this is the opportunity we can take to turn Elvis's career back onto the high flame of the oven, as it were, because, as I said, he was going downhill. So they fought back and forth. Elvis finally sided with the director, and it didn't become a Christmas special, but it became a fabulous special and relaunched his career. So he gives all the inside of the behind the scenes of how this all came to be, and you learn a lot about Colonel Tom Parker. He wasn't even a colonel to begin with. His name wasn't Tom. It wasn't Parker. And he wasn't even from Canada, from the United States. And you would know that if you saw the movie Elvis, but if you haven't. And this man was described by Steve Binder, the director, as a con man. So you'll learn about him and you'll learn about Elvis. It's fascinating. Terrific footage. And it's a great, great documentary. And I hope you enjoy the podcast. It's available at tedwallison.ca.
Should I even try it, Ted? Thank you. Thank you very much. We got to wrap it up. Yeah. That was my Elvis impersonation, by the way, in case that wasn't clear. Thank you to Kelly, our awesome producer, for taking care of us from behind the glass once again. Thanks to Debbie Stanley for her contribution about the update on the probate file. Thanks to Ted Wallison for his decades of radio excellence. Thanks to the listeners, of course. We couldn't do it without you. We're glad you're here this morning. Hopefully you'll join us again next Sunday. Enjoy your long weekend, Ted. I think you should take tomorrow off, by the way.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll be back. Thank you very much. Next Sunday, we'll do it again. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Have a nice week.
You've been listening to an exclusive podcast of Avoid Probate with Jason Laidler. Heard every Sunday at 8 a.m. on Zoomer Radio. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.